Street names include meth, crystal meth, ice, hot ice, super ice, speed, glass, LA glass, jib, Tina, and P. If none of those sound familiar, let me introduce you to methamphetamine. Like it sounds, it's souped-up amphetamine that delivers a faster and more potent high. Users can inject it, ingest it, smoke it, or snort it, and they can make it. With just a few pieces of hardware, some common and completely legal chemicals, and a recipe that anybody can find on the Internet. The first problem is a very real risk of explosion and fire. Cooking also spews toxic fumes into the air and produces 5 pounds of toxic waste for every pound of meth. Then there are the problems that come from using the drug. Prompt and powerful addiction leads to a host of psychological, emotional, and physical problems. In just a few years, meth spread across the country from the south and west, from a largely rural phenomenon to suburbs and big cities, and what was sometimes called hillbilly heroin has now crossed all socioeconomic lines. Later in this program, we'll bring you an update from Philadelphia, where Michael Eisner faces a rebellion by stockholders of the Disney Corporation. And we'll talk with NPR's Peter Sagal, who provided the creative spark that gave life to Dirty Dancing, Havana Nights. Yes, there was one. But first, methamphetamines. If you are or were a user, if you've dealt with it as a cop, a prosecutor, or an addiction counselor, if it's a problem where you live, give us a phone call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. New Mexico is one state all too familiar with meth. Rory Ogle is the state representative for Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he joins us now from his office in Albuquerque. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
The state legislature there recently passed two laws, one that's regulatory and one that deals with law enforcement, both of them, of course, dealing with meth. What can you tell us about them?
Well, the first one we passed was the child endangerment law, where we included a prima facie evidence clause and also connected that to our habitual offender laws. And the second one was a precursor law, which we tied to our pharmaceutical board, so that they can determine what a precursor we is, and that way we can control the pre-chemicals and the pre-substance to making meth.
All right. First and foremost, what is the link between methadrin and child endangerment?
Well, the problem comes up is in the making of the meth, what the children are exposed to in making the meth and the fumes and the toxic stuff, and also the chemicals that are just kept around in ball jars and things like that that often look like juice.
So children are around when people cook this stuff up?
Yes, they are, unfortunately, all too often. Here in New Mexico, it's about 30 to 35% of all meth labs have children in them.
And one assumes that to a large extent, those who are cooking are also users. That can't be good that their parents are methadrin addicts.
That's correct. It's a horrible substance, and it's a horrible thing to take, and it just destroys lives across our entire country, and it doesn't matter what economic, social group you come from. It affects us all.
I understand there's a personal issue for you.
Yes, it is. My stepson and my daughter-in-law both were users and then moved on to becoming cookers, exposing our grandchildren to this horrible stuff. We didn't realize it at the time what was going on, but my wife noticed that, for instance, my granddaughter, who's normally a sandy blonde, started getting a red tint or had a red tint to her hair. We've talked to folks, and it turns out that very possible that was because of the exposure to red phosphorus.
And red phosphorus is one of those precursor chemicals that you're talking about that's used in there are various formulations to make this stuff, but that's one of them.
That's correct, sir, and it's one of the main things, our main methods of making meth is the red phosphorus method.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, it uses phosphine gas and or releases phosphine gas, and also as hydrochloric acid is what it generates.
And none of those things, of course, are illegal. You can go to, well, it's not, I'm not sure any corner store would have them, but there's plenty of places you can get that stuff.
Well, there's a limit on, a federal limit now on red phosphorus. However, you can still get that through matches and things like that to get the quantity that you need.
Just scrape it off the matches.
That's right.
Yeah. How are things working out with your family?
Right now, well, with my son, my stepson, he's been clean after we had to do some real tough love with him for a little over a year now, but my daughter-in-law just got out of jail in Oklahoma and wrote to my son and said that she, as soon as she got out, she went and got high. So we're just going to wait. Have to wait until she gets picked up again.
With this background, clearly, when it touches your own family like this, you become more sensitive as you see it elsewhere in the community. How big a problem is it in New Mexico?
Well, this last weekend, we just busted a home right around the corner from my house. 6 weeks ago, a big lab was taken down a block from my house, and I live in a pretty, you know, average, normal, middle-class neighborhood. So it's pretty well spread. And you can find it in trailers to million-dollar homes, is what I've been told.
So what are people there doing to combat this, other than these two new laws?
Well, predominantly, it's been these two laws is what we're doing. We're also trying to keep up the information going to the community and get community awareness going, so we're looking out for these places so that we can inform, police to come in and take them down.
This causes a lot of problems for the police in any number of areas. We're going to be talking later with a law enforcement official to get more on that. But from the local vantage point, what kind of pressures has it put on the legal system there in New Mexico?
Well, it's one of the things that was one of the nice things about the precursor law is that we connected it to the pharmaceutical board. So in actuality, because industry is not going to want to lose their license to sell over-the-counter medicine, they're going to end up policing themselves. And hopefully that will reduce the number of labs that the police have to deal with themselves.
And, of course, one part is to try to limit the supply, and then raiding cooking houses, ice houses, and various kinds of things like that is one way to do this. But there's dealing with the people who are coming out of this, like your son, like your daughter-in-law. Are there good programs for treating addicts?
In our state right now, no. And there was also two other pieces of legislation that weren't laws. They were memorials. To ask like our health department and our different departments to look at state facilities that were either underutilized or vacant that can be turned into treatment facilities, and then to come up with a way to expand the treatment capabilities we do have in the state.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to read an email we just got in from, I'm not going to use the name. I'm someone whose life was destroyed by crystal meth. I'm a Harvard educated. I founded my own successful company, owned a beautiful home. I lost my company, my house, and contracted HIV while tweaking on meth over a 2-year period. Meth is a creeper drug and behaves very differently from drugs like cocaine and heroin in that the addiction creeps in much more slowly, but once it grabs hold is nearly impossible to shake. Rehabilitation from meth addiction is incredibly difficult and requires highly tailored and moderated rehab programs. For example, traditional peer mechanisms like 12-step meetings often lead to members triggering one another to pick it up again. I've been clean for 18 months now, but I am confronted in dealing with AIDS. AIDS, I assume, a byproduct of using needles to shoot up methadone.
Correct. And this thing just takes over the human being and just totally dominates them. It's an extremely destructive substance, and I'd hope everybody would realize that and wake up to it and not use it.
Well, joining us now is Carol Falkowski. She's director of research communications at the Hazelden Foundation, a national addiction treatment and research center based in Minnesota, and she joined us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
First of all, tell us, what is this drug exactly?
Well, methamphetamine is a central nervous system stimulant. It's similar in effect to cocaine, with the major exception that it is much more long-lasting. So someone under the influence of methamphetamine can go 8 to 12 hours is the normal duration of action. And in addition to that, once someone develops and moves into methamphetamine addiction, there are other psychological complications as well. I thought it was fascinating that the email you got talked about it's a creeper drug, because many meth addicts have described it as very seductive at first, because typically their first use of the substance, they feel more alert, they feel plugged in, they feel more in tune, they feel like they can have a lot of energy, they can get a lot done, they can multitask, and certainly that's something that's desirable in this culture. But within typically a matter of months, it does. It takes over their lives. And once they're addicted, they develop severe paranoid delusions and even psychoses related to their addiction.
I've heard that you can sometimes, by the time you get to that stage, you can recognize somebody who's on meth by just looking at them. What are the symptoms?
Well, unlike other drugs of abuse, meth does take a strong physical toll because people are basically going days at a time without sleeping and days at a time without eating. So things you can look for, he mentioned the discolored hair. Also, you can look for a strong chemical odor, sometimes skin lesions, and just a marked change in someone's physical appearance.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And with us on the line is Norman, who's with us from Hayward, California.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I was a user from the age of 15 till just a year and a half ago, which is about 20 years. And I've been in labs. I don't know how to cook, but I've watched the process. And iodide crystals, for example, burn people's skin. It's a deadly and dangerous situation. One of the labs I was in, they had made a mistake while they were using the phosphorus and created a gas that turned the whole garage orange and everything that was in it. And it was hard to believe that, you know, we were standing there in it and not really the drug had so much of a hold. It was more important, you know, we wanted to get high. We didn't really care about what was happening around us. And since then, I've been clean for about a year and a half. I've spent a lot of time up in the mountains around Hayward, California, and found the remnants, the dumps from people when they dump the chemicals that are left from making the methamphetamine, and the sludge that's left over, the cans from the camp stove fuel, lye, you know, all of this stuff that's just polluting the environment also. And just, you know, anybody out there that wants to quit, please do. And it's tough. I've got a good family that's helped me. And not only you're hurting yourselves, but the stuff that people are doing is hurting people everywhere around us.
Norman, thank you very much for the call. And hang in there.
Definitely, I will.
Okay.
Got a year and a half, and it's going to be longer.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. But, you know, the people that use also need to know that what they're using is destroying the environment around them.
Well, I wanted to ask Rory Ogle about that. Has this become an environmental problem in New Mexico, as Norman was saying it is in the area around Hayward, California?
Oh, absolutely. The cleanup process is horrendous where a lab was in a house or a trailer, not to mention also the soil impacts where they just dump the stuff out on the ground and leaches into to the water table, and also they pour it down the drains and it goes into our Rio Grande River, which is our main water supply here in New Mexico. So yes, it's an environmental problem.
Some states have also prosecuted under the Clean Water Act violations for meth lab cookers. We have an issue here in the state of Minnesota with people doing meth labs even in ice fishing houses out on the frozen lakes and putting all the waste products into the lakes. It's an enormous issue.
Norman, we just have a few seconds, but what convinced you to quit?
Well, I was lucky. I've found my birth family, and my aunt was a counselor for 20 years. She had a problem at one point, and it was just time in my life. And watching the destruction around me, I mean, there's a lot of good people out there all over that are being lost to this addiction. And it's, you know, 20 years to live it. And it's worse now because they're smoking it and injecting it, and the drug is actually stronger. It's nothing like what we did 20 years ago, which was the biker speed. Now it's this high-end crystal stuff that is just even more insidious. You fall asleep with the pipe in your hand, you wake up and you light it up again.
Norman, thanks very much. And again, hang in there.
I definitely will. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Rory Ogle, we thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
And good luck with your family problem.
Appreciate it. Will do.
Rory Ogle, a state representative for Albuquerque, New Mexico. He joined us from his office there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. More of your calls about methadrin when we come back from a short break. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can email us, TOTN at NPR.org. We're talking about methamphetamine. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the addiction and law enforcement problems, health problems, environmental problems, all associated with methamphetamines. Our guest is Carol Falkowski, a drug abuse researcher for the Hazelden Foundation. If you're familiar with methamphetamines, a.k.a. meth, ice, glass, join the conversation. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us, TOTN, at npr.org. And Carol Falkowski, how do you treat methamphetamine addicts, and is it different from treating other kinds of drug users?
Well, one thing I've heard a lot lately about methamphetamine is this, similar to what I heard about cocaine addiction in the 1980s, which is, gee, treatment just doesn't work for people addicted to this drug. And I think that really does people a disservice and does treatment a disservice, because the fact of the matter is that regardless of what drug gets you there, effective treatment for addiction does exist. Now, certainly with methamphetamine, there are some unique challenges that meth addicts bring into the treatment system. One example is the fact that it may be that they, because sometimes the paranoid delusions and the psychosis that goes along with methamphetamine addiction, and by that, just let me back up to sort of characterize that. People get absolutely consumed with the idea that people are out to get them. They hear things that aren't there. They see things that aren't there. And they're really in a psychotic state. Now, for many meth users, those symptoms go away once they stop meth use. For a smaller number, they last sometimes weeks and even months after cessation of meth use. And for a very tiny percentage of people, and there isn't good research on how big this percentage is, sometimes they are persisting throughout a lifetime that they believe it's apparently related to their initial methamphetamine addiction. So when you're looking at a treatment system for addiction, where we're moving with public and private forces toward shorter treatment stays for more outpatient treatment, that's really not that compatible with what we're finding many meth addicts need, which are really longer periods of stay because of the longer detox period that goes along with the methamphetamine addiction and the persistence of some of these delusions.
And those delusions, I assume, aren't, there's no way to help them if you're not getting any sleep, if you stay up for 10 days at a time, as I've heard some users do.
Exactly. And I think getting back to the first person's point about child endangerment laws, it's not unusual for someone who's addicted to methamphetamine to go for days at a time without sleep, so that it's just one big time period to them, and sometimes it's bright out and sometimes it's dark. But when they're caregivers of children who really need the clock for things like getting up and eating and sleeping and going to bed, that's really the tragedy of meth addiction in homes with children, as well as the exposure to labs. It's been estimated that people can use methamphetamine, and within about 6 months, they may develop the urge to start making it themselves. And while people making meth, a lot of people think of a meth lab as, you know, Granny Clampett's kind of moonshine big operation, when in fact it's a very small portable operation. You can set up a portable meth lab on the back of a toilet seat or a counter in the kitchen or on a dresser. It's very portable. And on routine traffic stops, it might just look like a box full of hardware store things on the back seat of a car. So they're very portable, but the people who are making them typically make it for enough for their own use and the use of their friends, and they aren't trained chemists. So when something goes wrong, even though they get these recipes off the internet, if something goes wrong, they don't know how to correct it. So we've had cases where, you know, someone is cooking gasoline in a frying pan over a gas burner. Well, kaboom, you know, things happen, and it's a really tragic aspect as well that really isn't apparent with other drugs of abuse, this whole manufacturing aspect.
Let's get another caller on the line. Carrie's with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, I work at Psychiatric Recovery, which is like an emergency room for mental health. People mm-hmm. are psychotic. And I guess my comment and concern is that we have very little budget anyway for mental health, and we are having a tremendous amount of people on meth who come in. They are incredibly dangerous. They are out of control. It would take security, we call for extra help, to hold them down. I'm not exaggerating, 5, 7, 8 people to hold one person down who is psychotic, paranoid, dangerous, and the police seem to have no way to deal with them, so they bring them to our facility, and we basically, you know, give them injection to help them sleep, to come down, and the next morning they're like day and night, and they keep coming back and coming back because they're, on top of everything else, there are no resources to really treat these people. When they're ready to come into our facility and then get help, we have no place to send them. And so it's just an incredible problem in the Phoenix area.
Is it getting worse?
Well, I think so. I've been there 5 years, and it just takes up all our time and energy to deal with the drug problem here.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I think that raises, you know, a big challenge of methamphetamine addiction is getting meth addicts into treatment. Once they're in a treatment setting and they're detoxed from the drug, you can make progress. But getting them there is very hard for the symptoms you're describing. They have rage and anger. They have violent outbursts. I mean, it's a really volatile situation.
Thanks.
And it looks more psychiatric than drug-related.
Exactly. And I think the sad part, too, is that the families that have no way to help their family members, no way to stop it, and they're far more worried than the person using. I mean, they're just out there having whatever time they're having, but the families are destroyed. You know,
yeah.
They're stealing from them. They're taking everything they have, and it's just a vicious cycle.
Carrie, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And joining us now to talk about the methamphetamine problem from a law enforcement perspective is Bob Peters, a special agent for dangerous drugs and chemicals at the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA. He's with us from DEA headquarters in Arlington, Virginia, and it's good of you to be with us today.
Yes, thanks for inviting us.
This is not a new drug. Why is it getting so much more attention of late?
It's not a new drug. I think the reason it's getting more attention is because it's spread across the country fairly rapidly in the last 10 years.
And we keep talking about these the people who cook it up themselves. How much of this is a homegrown product, and how much of this is a product of the drug business and imported and made in big labs?
Well, our studies indicate that approximately 80% of all the methamphetamine consumed is manufactured by criminal organizations, mostly based in Mexico. However, probably 96%+ of all the meth labs seized in the United States, which is fairly extensive, are what we refer to as a small toxic lab, which is what's been referred to by your previous guests. And these types of labs can be as small as a shoebox, or it can be as, you know, take up a whole room.
And so in some level, you're dealing with this on a very local law enforcement basis, these little labs. On another level, you're dealing with this like cocaine or heroin or any other of the big drug problems.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you say it's largely based in Mexico?
Yes. We're seeing a lot of the organizations that are manufacturing meth we're seeing are based in Mexico. I mean, there are some labs being operated in the United States, which are fairly large capacity. We refer to those as super labs.
Mm-hmm.
And any super lab is any lab that manufactures more than 10 pounds of pure meth per reaction, whereas as opposed to the small toxic labs, which will manufacture grams or ounces at the most.
And how big a problem is it? As we're saying, it's spreading across the country. We're getting some terrible stories. Obviously, it's destroying people's lives and having terrible effects. But compared to cocaine, crack cocaine, heroin, how do you compare those things?
Well, the levels of methamphetamine, as far as being available, have actually the amount of labs and stuff have actually decreased slightly in the last year or so. But it started out about 9-10 years ago. It was pretty much a West Coast phenomenon, California and Oregon, Washington, even Texas. And then during those the 10 years after that, it just spread all the way across the country. So we're seeing in some places where it's really big. The Midwest is seeing a tremendous problem. Places like Florida and even New York that historically didn't have much of a problem with methamphetamine are now having a problem.
Okay, let's get another caller on the line, and this is Dan, who's with us from Orlando, Florida.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Excellent. I just wanted to, relate my story. Back in 85, I was in the Marine Corps, and that's where I was introduced to it. you know, having to stay up 24 hours or 72 hours on duty, and it was one of those things that, you know, other members that were in the service with me, you would, you know, say, here, try this, and, you know, once you try it, it's, you know, you go from being so tired you can't keep your eyes open to staying awake for 24 hours and never feeling tired, and it's, the addiction is in my perspective, was 10 times that of the high you would get from cocaine or anything else. And I was one of those few lucky ones. After I did my time in the service and worked out in California for a while, I moved back home, and I left it behind me. But there's never a day I say to myself that, you know, thank God I walked away and I can't believe, you know, I got away from it, because I know several friends that I've tried to get in contact with that have since passed away, and it's the difference between methamphetamine and cocaine is cocaine, you're always chasing the high. Methamphetamine, you never chase the high. After you come down and you do your next line or whatever, you're right back up. So the addiction has such a strong hold on a person, it's almost impossible to break.
And again, what was it that managed to convince you that you had to do it, or enabled you to do it?
The thing that got me into it, like I said, was I needed to stay awake or feel good staying awake. And once you get that first feel good, you can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
And the thing that got me away from it, I guess, was, you know, the draw of my family back in Illinois. And, you know, once I moved, I was away from that element. And in the Midwest at that time in 88, there was cocaine and, you know, the other drugs, but none of those had an attraction to me. And, you know, I figured as long as I stayed away from California, I was safe. And since then, I've never gone back. Too afraid, I believe.
Well, Dan, congratulations. And good luck
Thank
to you.
You.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bob Peters, as you listen to these stories that we've been broadcasting, I assume these are nothing new to you, do the psychological problems that we're hearing about and the rage problems that we're hearing about, do these present special problems for law enforcement?
Oh, absolutely. When you've got individuals who have spent, 5 to 7 days without sleep, as the doctor, the treatment specialist just mentioned, that these people are in their own world. They're psychotic, and this drug, it causes people to become very violent. And we see a huge correlation between methamphetamine use and abuse and domestic abuse, especially when it involves children. But, it doesn't surprise me. And the gentleman before you, I think that's great that he managed to walk away from it like that.
Yep.
Right. If there's been one trend, too, in just the last several years, it's that the age of first methamphetamine use is gradually getting smaller and younger ages. And I think when you think of the introduction to drug abuse of young people, I mean, many teenagers, the first time they drink alcohol, they'll get physically ill. The first time they smoke cigarettes, they may get physically ill. But with methamphetamine, it's just a surge of energy, and they're more attentive, and they don't need to eat, and they don't need to sleep, and it's very seductive. I'm really keying on the word a creeper drug, because it does really creep up on people.
We're talking about the new problems associated with an ever-spreading drug called methamphetamine. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email we got from Michael Halyard. I'm a psychotherapist in San Francisco. We've had a huge increase in STDs and HIV. It's caused by people using the drug and having unsafe sex. The practice is called party and play. The answer is not law enforcement. It should be more funding of treatment programs. Putting someone in jail for this just means when they come out, they'll use again. Bob Peters?
Well, having had personal experience, I've been with DEA for 17 years, and I spent the majority of that time on the West Coast, and the majority of my time was working on methamphetamine abuse and lab cases. And I wish I could tell you the number, but I've had many people who I've arrested, thank me afterwards, because that was the one thing that brought them to a point in their lives where they knew they had to do something. And otherwise, they just keep going and going and going. So law enforcement is effective in bringing people to treatment, because it very rudely makes them aware of the problem that they have.
Okay.
And I think that highlights you can't arrest your way out of it. You can't just treat your way out of it or educate your way out of it. You really need the same message coming from those multiple messengers and getting at it from all the angles.
Another email from Sean. Could you tell me what the difference is between methamphetamine and amphetamines? I'm listening to your program, and I'm about to take my afternoon dose of amphetamine with dextroamphetamine for ADD, and I'm very curious to learn about possible risks and connections.
Who wants to do this
one? I think, Carol, that's to you.
Yes, thank you.
That's to me. All right. Well, methamphetamine and amphetamine and dextroamphetamine are just a little molecule away from each other. They are very similar in effects to each other, but they're just a slightly different chemical composition. Many of the medications that are used to treat ADD and ADHD are dextroamphetamine or amphetamine-based. I think what we're talking about is the difference between appropriate medical use and abuse. Clearly, methamphetamine is a drug taken recreationally to produce a euphoric high, and these others, if taken as directed, will not result in addiction.
Okay. One final call. Let's go to Doreen, who's with us from Honolulu.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm just calling because, you know, I did the drug when I was younger, and yes, it is a creeper drug, and I tell whoever I talk to about it that it is. My sister was addicted to it, and it was really bad, and she finally got off one day when the dealer, she didn't have any money, and told her she would have to sleep with him, and then that woke her up, and she's doing fine now with the family. But I just wanted to say that, you know, here in Hawaii, it's a major epidemic. They smoke it out here. And I noticed that it became really big when they started the green harvest. In the 70s, marijuana was the main drug down here. And when they started wiping out all the plants and making the price for that, I believe, you know, innocent drug, you know, because to me it's nothing more than alcohol or cigarettes. In fact, it's more safe than alcohol or cigarettes. But when they made the prices for that go up, I guess the price of ice, which is what we call crystal meth out here, was so cheap that people just turned to that, and now it's such an epidemic. My boyfriend, he teaches out in Waianae, and a lot of his kids, their parents are strung out on ice, and these kids, they just have no direction, and it's really, really sad. And I just have one question.
Very quick. We don't have time for a question, Doreen. I'm afraid we're running out of time, but thank you for the phone call and raising a raft of questions for perhaps another program. We have to thank our guests now, Carol Falkowski, a drug abuse researcher at the Hazelden Foundation, and she's based in Minnesota. She wrote the book Dangerous Drugs, an easy-to-use reference for parents and professionals. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also to Bob Peters of the DEA with us from Arlington, Virginia. Thanks for your time today.
My pleasure.
We'll be back after a short break and talk about the Disney stockholders' revolt underway in Philadelphia. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.